The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to worship with the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We're a liberal, welcoming faith community in Collegeville, Pennsylvania, and now, with telecommunication devices and the internet, accessible anywhere on the planet via your computer and your phone. I'm Jerry Lazzaro. I chair the worship committee here at the Thomas Paine UU Fellowship, and I am greatly honored to be leading worship this Father's Day 2020. But this day, as we honor and celebrate fathers and fatherhood, we also acknowledge the turmoil and uncertainty engulfing our world today, increasing the pressures and demands on fathers, on mothers, on families, everywhere. We empathize with those for whom today is a painful reminder of a father, grandfather, or father figure or mentor lost to the COVID-19 pandemic. And we empathize with the children of George Floyd and the three daughters and one stepson of Rayshard Brooks, two Black fathers killed by police in the last month. Those children are without their father this Father's Day, as are so many children whose father, stepfather, or fatherly mentor has been caught in the grinding machine of systemic racism, mass incarceration, and police brutality. So it's fitting to begin worship this morning with these opening words by Unitarian Universalist Seminarian Lorraine Baldorf McNeil, who reminds us of the reciprocal covenant necessary to empower fathers and sustain communities. Here are her words. Today is Father's Day, in which we honor and offer gratitude for our fathers in whatever form or fashion they come into our lives, biological fathers, stepfathers, adoptive and foster fathers, grandfathers, spiritual fathers, and all of the uncles, brothers, and friends who, whether they know it or not, have helped to fill the role of father in someone's life. We are shaped by their presence and their absence, by how they choose to act and when they abstain, what they say, and when they remain silent. Let us remember today and always the impact that these people have on us as individuals and as a community. And let us also remember that this relationship is not one-sided, and that we, as a community, are called to support and empower the fathers of this world, no matter how they came into their roles and regardless of their relative successes or failures. Let us raise up their triumphs and let us have the grace to forgive them their all too human failures. Let us love our fathers and each other. Come, let us worship together. Yes, whoever you are, from wherever you've come, wherever you may be on your journey, whatever you must, in conscience, truly, responsibly believe, whatever your gender, identity, or expression, whomever you love, whoever loves you, come, let us worship together. And now, Mike McNeil, proud and loving father of Ryan and Corinne, will read our chalice lighting words.
The chalice and the flame together form the symbol of our free faith, signifying many things, including our openness to the wisdom of many ages and many traditions, and our commitment to keep the flame of truth, justice, and compassion burning in our hearts and in our world. We light our chalice this morning with words by Reverend Peter Fredericks, minister of our neighboring UU congregation in Media, Pennsylvania, the Unitarian Universalist Church of Delaware County. For sleepless nights awaiting the curfew breakers, for anxious hours as a driving instructor, for hours spent on sidelines cheering and watching school plays, sometimes resting our eyes, for the pressures of breadwinning and wait till your father gets home, for teaching moments and mentoring moments, for making up answers when you just don't know, but are expected to because you know everything, for scrapes and boo-boo kisses and band-aids, for hugs and kisses and silliness and play, for bedtime stories and early morning ice time, for all the aftershave and ties received as gifts, for handing over car keys and waves goodbye, for father-daughter wedding dances and cradling grandchildren for the first time, for all the moments and all the meaning in the role of a lifetime, we light our chalice for fathers and fatherhood.
Now, let's light our peace lamp. Please join responsively with the words that you will hear.
After I light the peace lamp, your response will be, and with all the people of the world. May peace be with you and with all the people of the world.
Now, let's sing together our gathering song, though I may speak with bravest fire. The words of this song are adapted from a passage in 1 Corinthians in the New Testament of the Christian Bible. You'll see that passage on the video as the melody is played once before the song verses appear and we begin singing. The three verses are set to a beautiful traditional English melody, a tune often referred to in musical circles as the gift of love. Fitting, don't you think, for a day honoring fatherhood? And after we sing together, Lizzie Vina, our Director of Lifespan Faith Development, will conduct this morning's Moment for All Ages.
When I saw that Jerry was talking about dads, compassion, and play, I knew right away which story I would tell. The first time I read this story on social media, it warmed my heart and has stuck with me. Perhaps you've heard this or something similar before. Let's give this story a fresh listen and watch for the messages of compassion as we hear a story of one particular dad and his son. Once upon a time, in a Starbucks cafe located inside a Target store, a father and son stopped to enjoy a treat together. It was a hot day, and they had enjoyed their break from the heat in the air-conditioned store. Time for some nice, cool drinks. So Dad ordered a large iced coffee, and his son requested a big, ice-cold grape slushy. He couldn't wait to slurp that icy cold and brightly colored drink. They sat down and started to sip their drinks, feeling immediately refreshed. They started to play one of their favorites, the animal guessing game. Dad said, "I am thinking of an animal that lives on a farm and starts with K, K, C." The boy begins to guess. "Cat? Camel? Cow! That's it!" exclaimed Dad. His son began to cheer with excitement at his victory, but then, purely by accident, something terrible happened. Or maybe it wasn't really terrible at all. Keep listening, and you decide. The boy cheered. He gave a gentle inside yell, "Yippee!" and raised his hands in the air. Just then, he knocked into his slushie. It crashed to the ground. The cup broke open. There was blue and red goop all over the floor, the table, everywhere. The boy looked up and quietly said, "I'm sorry, Daddy." Now, spilling things is no fun, and grown-ups can get especially grumpy when kids spill things away from home. What do you think this dad did next? Take a moment and share with the folks you are listening with at home. This particular dad reacted in a way that surprised the other folks nearby. He didn't get angry. He didn't yell. He didn't put his kid in timeout. This dad calmly said, "Hey, it happens. Let's go get napkins and I can show you how to clean it up." They walked together over to the counter, got napkins, and then this dad, this wonderful, patient, compassionate dad, helped him clean up the entire mess. As they were throwing the napkins away, the father said to his son, "You're going to be a human being for a long time, and you have such a smart brain that it's important to learn how to be more aware of what you're doing. So next time, just be sure to pay more attention to your surroundings so accidents like this don't happen. As long as you take responsibility for your mistakes, the cleanup is a breeze." Let's take a moment to think about a few questions. I'll send this story and these questions to your parents so that you can talk more about it after the service. What did the son learn from this experience? Do you think he would have been able to learn these same lessons if his dad had yelled or punished him instead? Can you think of a time when something didn't go well, a spill or some other accidental mistake? How did you or could you take responsibility for cleaning up or working to fix the problem? If this is a story about a dad showing compassion, what do you think compassion means? Thank you.
I invite you now to enter a period of reflection and meditation. Get comfortable in your seat. Raise and lower your shoulders a few times to relax those neck muscles. Take a deep breath. Let it out. Again, breathe in, breathe out. Breathe in, hold. Breathe out. Now just let your breathing happen. Now close your eyes if doing so helps you focus on the present moment. Now bring to the top of your mind a father or father figure that you always carry in your heart. Focus on an image of that person as you often imagine them. Now, remember a time or times when you felt connected to them, perhaps when they understood you, appreciated you, comforted you. Take a deep breath and settle into the occasion and the feelings of that occasion. Now, if you're up to this, remember a time that the father or father figure you've imagined left you feeling misunderstood, unappreciated, hurt. You may feel uncomfortable, but if you can, try to own those feelings. Breathe deeply and honor those feelings as a connection you have with your own heart. Now, think of a sentence you wish you had said or could possibly say to that person, if that person were beside you right now. Let the words enter not just your mind, but your entire body. As we move to close this period of reflection and meditation, I invite you to breathe in these fathering words, words that we all want or have wanted to hear at some point in our lives, and that surely those we parent would love to hear from us. I love you, as you were, and as you are. I am so proud of you. I know you can do this. What you believe and what you feel is important. I stand beside you. You can depend on me. I have faith in you and in the goodness of your heart. And add, if you will, any fathering words you would like to speak or hear. And when you're ready, take three deep breaths, open your eyes, and return to the present to be with us. Now let's have a musical meditation, compliments of Isaac Strader. When I was planning a service, I had the idea that we wanted to talk about fathers, and since the theme of this month in our denomination is compassion, that we would somehow connect those two. And then I remembered that originally, before COVID-19 virus took hold in our country and we witnessed just horrifying scenes of police brutality, the theme had been play. And so I was trying to sort of meld those things together. I said, gee, what did we learn from our fathers through play about compassion? But sometimes, as our first member today to speak for a homily pointed out, work and play are not always that easily teased out of the tangle of lives and of relationships. So we have some people with some very interesting things to say about their dads and the lessons they learned about compassion. So let's hear them now. First, Gina Mastrangeli. And then we have Lorraine Lee, Preston Lutweiler, Christine Perry, and then I'll have a few words to add myself. Gina?
Okay. I'm Gina Mastrangeli, daughter of Alfred Mastrangeli. My father's recreation was making money. For him, making money was a game, a strategy. If I happened to walk into his office, he'd shortly be telling me about his latest scheme. I'm going to take this amount of money and place it here with this interest rate. And then he would grab his adding machine, punch in a few numbers, pull the crank a couple times. Now with this interest rate over this amount of time, it will grow to this amount. And now I can take it out and put it in this place. His eyes lit up. His body became focused with an excited energy. On the other hand, I became a zombie. I studied math, but put a dollar sign in front of a number, my eyes glaze over. But let me give you some background information about my dad. At 18, he was a high school dropout. He was poor and disdainfully referred to as WOP or Guinea, the derogatory term for Italian Americans at that time. All his life on farms, he checked minority. So let's fast forward to my lifetime. Ever since I was young, I remember my father working really hard. He would take on extra jobs to pay for his education and then later to supplement his professor's salary. No job was beneath him. One time he took a job as a cashier at a mom and pop store. Another summer he sold World Book Encyclopedias. Another summer it was prefab houses. He also was not afraid to take a risk or try something new. One year he managed the local theater. For me, it was great, free movies for a year. Another time he bought a small town newspaper, managed it. And when he realized this was not going to be a fruitful financial venture, he sold it. But finally, he found his true calling that merged his passions, making money, of course, and helping people. He became a certified financial planner. By this time, we were settled in a small upstate New York town at the foothills of the Adirondacks, Richard Russo country. Are you familiar with the novelist Richard Russo, who wrote Empire Falls, Nobody's Fool, and novels based on the devastation of upstate New York. I have to read this. Upstate New York cities and towns when industries packed up and relocated to places that would bring higher profit to upper management. This happened when my parents lived there. My father applied his financial savvy to help people plan their budgets. His mantra, do not depend on Social Security or pensions. Try to build your own nest egg. For the teachers, he discovered a better alternative to the Teachers Pension Fund, TIA CREF. And he was not a fan of annuities. Because my father had a compassion for those struggling and a gentle touch with the common everyday person, his self-owned business grew into a successful endeavor that benefited both him and others. The day of his burial in Vermont, the man he had sold his business to, who was also his accountant and a former student, remarked that my father had helped a great many people as a professor, as a financial planner, and as a human being. My cousin's husband approached me later that day and told me that when he had been laid off, my father treated him like a real person and offered him some helpful advice. So there are many lessons I learned from my dad, but specific to Jerry's homework assignment, for me, these lessons are 1, resilience. 2, if possible, marry a passion with work, because then it becomes play. 3, never forget what it was like to have nothing. And finally, lend a helping hand to those who are struggling and try to help them help themselves if possible.
These are words I shared with my daughter and granddaughters this week. And I would like to say if my father were alive, I think he would be saying exactly this to me. My father was a lifelong fierce member of the working class. As such, he understood the frustrations faced by workers who always suffer the most in times of uprising and change. As a worker himself, he had great respect for his fellow workers and their toil. A revolutionary, he was the first to teach me about the folly of looting and destruction of property. He said, and I remember him saying this to me, if you break things and destroy property, you are destroying the work of your fellow workers and thus disrespecting them. For me, in this time we're living through, it's still that simple. Thanks, Father. I love you.
When I was growing up, my dad, James Cornelius Lutwiler, was the one who usually organized games for kids at family reunions or group gatherings. The games were never baseball or football, but rather steal the bacon or capture the flag or baby in the air or Simon Says or a scavenger hunt. There were games for all ages. They didn't require a lot of skill or equipment. The stakes for winning or losing were low. They were fun. No one got hurt. And one could say they were compassionate games. My dad was what I would call unconventionally athletic. He was a gymnast, a pole vaulter, a figure skater, a skier, not a football player. He was enrolled in a physical education curriculum at Springfield College when World War II broke out. And he went into the Army, fought in Europe, and finished his undergraduate education after the war at University of Wisconsin on the GI Bill. He seldom talked about the war. He never talked about college football games. When I was in high school, I never attended a football game. I remember feeling uncomfortable at football pep rallies where the student body would gather and get whipped into a frenzy against the opposing football team, dehumanizing them, vilifying them, calling for their annihilation. The Vietnam War was in full swing at that time. As a Quaker, I had strong reservations about the war. When I was a little older, in college, I came to understand better how wrong that war was. And only later in life did I see newsreels of the rallies of Nazi Germany that led to the war in which my dad had fought. And it cost at least 6 million innocent civilians their lives. Those Nazi rallies were the equivalent of our high school football pep rallies on steroids, an absence of compassion and critical thought, a vacuum into which rushed emotions of primordial aggression. I saw a glimpse of it last night on the news from Tulsa, Oklahoma. Colin Kaepernick has suggested to all Americans that we engage in our national pastime with some compassion and cultural introspection. The suggestion was such an affront to blind patriotic fervor that he was ostracized and punished. And it's refreshing today to see his image being rehabilitated and also to see at least a few Confederate statues being taken down. I think my dad, the unconventional athlete and the quiet leader of compassionate games, would approve.
Good morning. I have a couple photos of my dad to share, and I will let our tech guru of the day know when to put them up. My dad definitely influenced the development of my own compassion of others. He never spoke in hatred toward a person or a class or a type of person that I recall. He would sometimes express his dislike of an individual's values or political agenda or maybe character, but these opinions always stayed in the realm of judging others' actions and words, never a person's background, race, or age. He evaluated people for the choices they made, not what they were born into and cannot change. He has always loved meeting new people and getting to know them and sharing ideas and having good times with friends. If you could put up the first slide of my dad and my mom. Okay, it's got a caption. Yes, this was quite a few years ago at a campground when the whole family got together for a little gathering. Now, the other concept that's being looked at today is play. And I think my dad is even more influential in this area of my upbringing. My dad loves corny jokes, card games, board games, clever sayings, like the one on the t-shirt that he is wearing in this photo in 2012. If you can't read it, it says, "Music is my religion." And some of you of a certain age may recognize the symbol in the center. And he got a real kick out of the fact that that symbol is referring to records, vinyl records, which he has a large collection of vinyl records, vinyl music. Music on vinyl, I guess they say. He also loved drawing cartoons. And you can change the slide now. Making funny faces. And I have to say something about that picture, though that is not me. That is another relative in my family. But that face that my dad is making has become a signature family trait as to, can you do it or can you not do it? Some of us can do it and some of us can't do it. And if you got that trait, then you know it came down to the family. I'm going to give it a shot. Okay. Okay, you can change to the next slide. Thanks. He's also a great self-taught musician, specifically a jazz piano player, ragtime, jazz, old standards, that kind of thing. And when I was a child, we always had a piano, and he played nearly every day, usually after dinner, when things were quieted down from the day, and he'd sit down and play six or seven songs in a row, melodies that I became familiar with, though didn't always know the titles of. Sometimes my mom would sing. And it's funny, timing-wise right now, what's happening is my sister is listening to an old cassette that she recorded my dad playing the piano. It's badly damaged and the sound is not great. But he doesn't play anymore. And so it's kind of, never we'll hear these songs again. And she played some for me. We were trying to identify the songs, and some of them we could get and some of them we couldn't. And he said, I have heard that melody a million times, but I don't know what song it is. So she's working on that project as a surprise for my mom and dad. And I'll just close by saying, this piano playing and having music in the home, I'm sure I took it for granted. When I got older, I began to realize that not everyone has a piano concert after dinner every night, and my mom's singing out from the kitchen. Thanks.
Oh, thanks you guys. It was just wonderful. Such glimpses into your dad's life and your relationship with your dad. Incredible. You know, as Gina pointed out, work and play are not always that easily teased out of the tangle of lives and relationships. And that was certainly the case with my dad. He worked as much as he could when work was available. We didn't play much together as I was growing up. He worked long hours and was often fatigued when he was home. But beyond that was a history. My mom said to me on a few occasions, when my dad seemed overly impatient or annoyed with the antics of children, you need to understand your father didn't have a childhood. Now, of course he had been a child, so he had to have had a childhood, right? Well, I learned what she meant over many years of watching him and listening to him and listening to stories about him, the circumstances in which he grew up, 10 children in a family that struggled mightily financially, having to care for younger siblings. At the age of 5, he was already learning to scrape out a living, literally. He was selling water ice outside the family home, which for some time had a kind of front room, sparsely stocked store going on. He peddled apples to passersby. Now, back then, if you had water ice, you had a block of ice and you had this kind of scraping tool, and you scraped the ice, put it in a cup, and then added some flavoring. The point is, in my dad's childhood, there wasn't much time for play. But he did learn to play card games. He was a great pinochle player. I don't know if anybody knows anymore what pinochle is. I kind of look at it as the poor man's bridge. He played a little baseball. He played a lot of guitar. He went to learn music at the Settlement House in South Philly, where he grew up. I don't know if you're all familiar with the Settlement Movement. It was a social reform movement that peaked in the 20s. They established settlement houses in poor urban areas, houses in which volunteer middle-class settlement workers would live, hoping to share knowledge and culture with and alleviate the poverty of their low-income neighbors. My dad became a good enough musician to eventually give lessons there and to play professionally for many years. He also became something of an entertainer. He could make others laugh with his wordplay, his song parodies. If David Perry's listening, he was right on board with you. His joke telling and storytelling. He had more one-liners than the famous comedian Henny Youngman. And he could insert, sometimes with an incredibly straight face, a humorous twist or turn on whatever the subject of conversation. I mean, just something, we go to the doctor's office and the receptionist there is a little bit, you know, up, and he says, oh, the doctor will be with you shortly. And he just looks and he says, oh, that's what the midget said, turns around, walks away. She, of course, goes right over her head. She doesn't know what these, she probably thinks this is a senile old man, but he knew what he was doing. And watching him play with words and to play music, I learned a lot about the human heart and about the roots of community and of compassion. By the time I came along, he was no longer playing professionally, but he would bring out the guitar on occasions, like when my mother's family got together on Christmas night. Around the kitchen table and throughout the kitchen, aunts and uncles and some older cousins would start singing a song, or he would start playing one and they would sing. Songs they remembered from their years growing up, old standards, songs from the Second World War, some Neapolitan songs. I could see very early that his playing, his play, was his way of connecting with others and getting others to connect, to laugh together, reminisce together, share stories, to take time from work and all the other responsibilities to be again, or at last, like kids. The great Italian writer and scholar Umberto Eco believed that what we become depends upon what our fathers teach us at odd moments when they aren't trying to teach us. That certainly applied in this case. When I invited our fellowship members and friends to share a lesson learned from their father through play about compassion for their father, for themselves, for others, one response came from our minister, Larry Piers. Larry wrote that when he was 10 years old, his stepfather tried to connect with him through playing catch with a football. Larry remembers, "And all I wanted to do was to go read." Looking back, he says, "I can appreciate now what he was attempting to do, and I wish I had then." That says a lot about compassion, doesn't it? About trying not merely to observe what others do, but to understand, perhaps even appreciate, what they're trying to do, especially when they can't always succeed in doing it, or doing it well. Over the years, watching my dad play, discovering how he learned to play, and why he played, and what he was trying to do when he played, I appreciated more who he was. He wasn't trying to teach me anything, but he helped me to know, to feel, to believe that what others need most from us is not just to hear what they say or see what they do, but to see them. See them in the roles they've chosen or been compelled to play. See them in their struggle to make a life, not just a living. See what they've had to endure, what they've had to overcome, what they longed to be, what they're trying to do, what they are, shortcomings and all. To appreciate what they are, what they've been able to give. Forgive them what they're not, or weren't, or aren't able to give. And to whatever extent we possibly can, to love them. So be it, and amen.